everyone. Welcome back to the Atlanta Podcast. I am your host, Mappy Davis. It is Tuesday, which means I owe you another episode. And here it is. We're going to give you 2 weeks. I promise, every Tuesday and then one other day. So far, we're on a roll. Let's keep it going. On today's podcast, Kyle Turek. Or it's Turek. I'm not even sure exactly. I think I asked him during the show. I don't remember. This is actually from quite a ways back. As you're finding, I have a lot of good stuff in the can. As we've spoken, I was cranking things out, doing, I don't know, 3 or 4 a week for a while, and now I'm doubled down on that. Want to get these out to you. Got a lot of things coming. Check the Instagram. Check the Instagram feed. Check the Instagram stories. I'll get more into that later. But we are ATL Podcast on Instagram. That's ATL Podcast on the Instagram. We chatted here on the back porch of the Beltline. It was a beautiful day, as I recall. And let's dig in right now. Kyle and I, away we go.
You like the $64,000 pyramid. Was it the $13,000 pyramid?
Did you watch that as a kid?
Oh, yeah. I watched all the game shows.
The $25,000
pyramid. $25,000 pyramid.
With Dick Clark, right?
$64,000 question.
Right, but Dick Clark was the pyramid, right? Was that Dick Clark?
I feel like Dick Clark was like everyone's game show host, except for, you know, except for The Price is Right.
Right. Bob Barker, RIP. Is he dead, Bob Barker?
I think he only recently died. But he retired and went off to golf and spay and neuter everything he could get his hands on. Turned it over to Drew Carey.
And it's never been the same.
I think it's still fine. I think Drew Carey does a good job.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen it.
Yeah. Yeah. He slimmed down, which is nice. He did that a lot of that through running. He started running marathons and half marathons and such.
He didn't have the surgery?
No. He did it all himself.
Yeah. I'm impressed. Rich people usually take the shortcut.
Yeah, at that point, I think he wasn't rich. I think he'd hit rock bottom, and he was in rehab, and now I think he goes to meetings not only for alcohol and drugs, but also eating.
I should know this. I like to stay on top of the...
Oh, yeah. They did this Jack LaLanne spread in Runner's World when he revealed his new svelte figure.
Really?
Yeah, he was in like the jumpsuit and everything. It looks weird. It looks like they took Drew Carey's... like. Big round bullet head and put it on a thin body.
Yeah, that's always weird, like the Al Roker thing. It always looks a little...
Yeah, Al Roker just looks different.
Right. Could you maybe take your shades off unless they're prescription? Because I feel like I'm... There we go. Now I can speak to you and I'll take my glasses off.
Now I have that French Stewart thing going on. And just stare into the...
But here's the thing with French Stewart. He rocked as that one character because he looked like someone from outer space. What has he done since?
He was on an episode of Community wherein he was a gentleman. He was the proprietor of a celebrity lookalikes company, and he looked just like French Stewart. Or he might have been French Stewart. No, he looked like French Stewart. And then he said, well, this is the natural course you take when you've mined out the... gold mine that was looking like French Stewart. So basically he appeared on a show that very few people watched to make fun of himself.
I thought people watched Community. It was on for a few seasons.
I loved Community.
Do you procure, consume? Do you watch a lot of television?
I don't. No. I mean, not in the conventional sense, not cable or anything like that.
Netflix?
Like Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, all the on-demand services.
You know, you just made me romantic, though, about, which is silly, though.
I think we should just stay friends, man.
You had me feel romantic about this concept of the daytime television.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do have, like, I was definitely one of those latchkey kids.
Same.
And would watch, you know, I don't remember the order of shows, but it was definitely The Price is Right. It was definitely Pyramid. It was definitely... not Wheel of Fortune, but some of the Match Game.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And that was sort of my...
What was the one with the whammy?
See, that one was actually later, but that was...
That seems like it was late afternoon, early
That was
evening.
Press Your Luck.
Yeah, Press Your Luck.
No whammies, no whammies.
Yeah.
Have you heard that at This American Life?
Oh, yeah, where the guy figured out the system.
Fucking awesome.
Incredible. And that was like the only good thing he ever did. Everything else was like a scheme and he lost all his money and nothing panned out.
But not just that, the way he figured out the timing was by watching it on his fucking VCR.
Yeah.
Like, this is not lasers and technology. This is pausing and watching and going, I fucking got it.
Yeah, it was that terrible, like, shaky screen on pause, not descending from the ceiling via two, you know, counterweighted and cables.
And then has to actually, now you've got to get on the show, right? Like, you have this vision, okay, like the eureka moment of every time he hits pause, it's the whammy, okay, I've got it. Now you've got to actually get on the show and then execute. That's actually the show that got me into This American Life podcast. Because
really?
I'd always heard This American Life, you know, again, another like just staple in the radio, in the car, whatever. And then my wife says, have you heard this story? And I was like, well, it must be online because she had heard it that day.
Yeah.
And then that was like the first podcast I downloaded. So that's like 2010, 2011-ish.
Yeah, that was early.
Right?
Well, early for podcasts.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, we're just bumping all over the place, which is fine.
Which is great.
I'm totally okay with that. That's why I like talking to people like you, because you're interesting folks. Where were you born?
I was born in the very northwest corner of Indiana, in St. Catherine's Hospital, East Chicago, Indiana, in the middle of a blizzard. And then I lived in East Chicago until I was six. And somewhere between six and seven, we uprooted and moved to rural western New York State, about 2 hours south of Buffalo, 9 miles south, 9 miles north of the Pennsylvania border, absolutely in the middle of nowhere. Number two, second poorest county in the state. Number one for incest.
What did your folks do?
Not each other, because well, I mean, you know, as siblings,
at least once.
Yeah, they did it at least three times. My father was the purchasing agent for an engineering company that manufactured something to do with coal-fired power plants. And my mom was kind of all over the place. For a while, she stayed at home with us. And so instead of watching game shows when she was home and when she was awake, because she was a night owl, she stayed up late and then she would wake up late. So we were still latchkey kids even when mom was home. She would always change it to Little House on the Prairie. So I've seen the entire canon of Little House on the Prairie.
What about soap operas?
She wasn't much into soap operas. I remember she liked Knott's Landing, but we didn't watch a lot of
daytime those. Daytime.
Yeah, I know, but we didn't really watch that. We just watched Little House.
Because I have older sisters, so I watched a lot of General Hospital, a lot of Guiding Light, a lot of Young and the Restless.
No, I didn't come to, I think the only soap opera I ever watched was Dark Shadows.
I don't even know what that
is. Dark Shadows was the one that was like the crazy supernatural soap opera. It took place in Maine, and it was the Collins family. And the Collins family were vampires. And it went for
this
like...
Is daytime or nighttime?
For like six seasons. This was daytime, and it was hugely popular. And it was
nuts. Do you remember what network?
I don't. I remember I came to it. It was like in the 70s. I came to it in the early 2000s when the Sci-Fi Channel started running it. And it was like all these Lovecraftian themes and, you know, supernatural occurrences in Maine and New England.
If I remember, I will Google and put in the show notes. If I don't, it will get lost forever.
Here's how you find out about Dark Shadows and Barnabas Collins.
So what year did you make it here?
I have actually this month been here for 10 years.
Yeah?
Yeah, so it was 2007.
You seem so much more Atlanta rootsy.
Oh, it's because I love Atlanta, and when I was a small-town reporter, our publisher told us, learn as much as you can, as fast as you can. And so, you know, when you grow up in a tiny, tiny town, you start poking your nose into everything, because otherwise it gets really boring. So you just come here and start poking your nose into everything, and there's still so much more to poke your nose into.
So you were a small-town reporter in western New York?
I was, yeah. Very rural. So cops and courts and anything else that came along.
Was there anything exciting?
All the time. Yeah, if you looked for it. I mean, you would get all these, like, every now and then you would get a murder. But you would always have a fire. You would always have, like, some squabble between neighbors. And it would be, like, bizarre blotter stories were the best. And it would, you know, it would be a squabble over, you know, his dog kept getting into my yard, so I shot his white dog with pink paint gun pellets. So you'd have this polka dot dog, or people would get into a fight over a case of Milwaukee's Best.
No.
It was always like a mom kicked her son out of, out of her shed where he had been living because they got into a fight after she spilled Kool-Aid on his mustard-colored velour tracksuit. It was bizarre stuff like that.
Did you pick these up just off the blotter, or would you have to be friends with the local policeman?
You kind of were friends with the local policeman because everyone knew everyone. And some of them, we would pick them up off the blotter. You would see something that happened. Like the first thing you did in the morning was you would go to the police station. You would look through the blotter, take it all down. You would ask them questions. Anything further on this? Anything on that? And sometimes the police would call you and say, we got this kook over in lockup, or we're working on this story. So they were good about sharing tips as well when they knew this will be a fun story.
Did you ever write anything scathing, though, the where they were mad at you?
I'm sure. Yeah. And it probably wasn't, where it
like
was
a big scoop of the dirty cops down at the...
No, it probably wasn't even that. It was probably like, you misspelled our names, or this was inaccurate. Because when you're a small town reporter, they have such a tiny staff, and you have a lot that you still have to do, so they're pressuring you, like, turn out stories, crank out stories, crank out stories. You don't have time to work on anything. You have to do, like, 3 or 4 stories a day. So you just kind of, like, whip them out, and then it's,
And
you'll get inaccurate.
Internet, I'm guessing.
No, this is internet. I'm not that old. I'm only 38, so
okay.
This was, like, 2003,
okay.
2004.
Okay, I'm sorry. You do look about my age. You've got some salt and pepper going.
Well,
I look really good for my age. Maybe that's
you
it.
Look great for your age. Don't 40, stop at good.
45. Can you believe it?
I cannot. I would have pegged you at 44.
Right?
You look stellar.
Right?
Matt.
Especially clean-shaven, right?
Yeah. Yeah, when you do it up, you do it. I bet you wear a tuxedo really well.
You know, I had to go to court yesterday. I had to find. I have like a pair of dress pants handy, a button up. The hardest thing to find was my shoes.
Mm.
They were literally under the dresser, covered in so much dust and spider web that I had to just sort of. I didn't have time to actually. What do you call it?
Shine them up, buff them up.
I just grabbed a wet paper towel and like, all right, I'm going to court today.
Got
Let's
that
make
spit
this
shine.
Make the. So yeah, I just. Once this became my work outfit, how can you ever go back to t-shirt? After t-shirt, jeans, and sneaks, how could you ever go back?
It's going
to
be difficult, but maybe if I'm ever called into court or called into court on your behalf as a character witness. Why were you in court, Matt?
Oh, my goodness. I'm cleaning up an old ticket that I only found out about through my arrest, which is a very long story.
Yeah.
Which we'll have to tell in another.
I've been very curious about.
Tell on another episode that vaguely has something to do with Run the ATL.
I figured.
But that's the thing. So this is an early episode of this podcast.
Yeah.
I don't know what order it'll be in, but it'll be the first few, right?
Yeah.
I just interviewed a chef. He'll probably be at Have You, but maybe he won't
Kevin
be.
Kevin Gillespie at Gun Show.
That's right. Were you paying attention today?
Yes. Oh, Matt, I'm very much following you on all your social media. A devotee, if you will.
Thank you. But how you, and it's how you and I came together. Let me turn this phone
That's
off.
True.
It's buzzing. Somebody in Northport, New York. Do you know where that is?
I do know where Northport, New York is.
Did you grow up a Bills fan?
Everyone in Western New York grew up a Bills fan.
So how painful were the early 90s for you?
Oh, very painful. And the Bills part was awful, too. Well, I mean, that's when I was a teen, so, very awkward.
I'm waiting for this to stop so I can put it on, what do you call it, airplane. No, honestly, those soul-crushing Super Bowl losses, or where were you with all that? How was
well,
that?
Well, I mean, I wasn't, necessarily a football fan, but everyone was, gung-ho for the Bills, especially when, they go to the Super Bowl and you get drawn in as a fair-weather fan, and they're your hometown heroes. So, yeah, that was very... It was very humbling and very disappointing, and everyone at school the next day was just a little bit sobered by that, and the next year.
So let's try to explain this to people. Remember how horrible you felt when the Patriots came back to beat the Falcons? Remember that? Remember that feeling?
I do.
No, we're speaking to the audience now.
I know, but I'm standing in for the audience.
So imagine
like a
four
Greek audience.
Whole years of that. Four whole years of this is our year, and God damn it, we're going to do it.
They lost by 1 point
The first time. Yeah. Bills Giants was the first time, and then it was
the
three
field
soul
goal
crushers.
Went wide.
Right? God bless that guy. But again, so that feeling, which people here are still very fresh in that loss for fucking years. It'll never happen again. There's no way a team will go to the Super Bowl four times in a row. Ever.
It'll never die out. That joke. We were just watching the latest season of The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and what's her face?
The actress who plays Kimmy Schmidt.
No, the one that plays
the Indian
Lillian.
One?
She's talking about how their you know, how their neighborhood, East Dogmouth, is about to be gentrified and how she's fighting that. And she's saying how their water quality is poor. And she equates to, like, a developing nation where they send all the losing Super Bowl shirts. So somewhere in a developing nation, in a poor country, there are kids running around with, like, Falcons victory T-shirts. And she says, we have all our sports teams are the wrong victory. She pulls open her jacket and it says, Bills Super Bowl champions 1991 to 1993, something like that. And we were watching it, my wife and I, and I just kind of let out a groan and had to explain it to her.
Did you watch the little documentary about that?
I did not know there was a documentary about it.
It's called Four Falls of Buffalo.
Oh.
And they talked to Marv Levy, and they talked to, you know, all the principal players. Jim Kelly,
of course.
And the ugly guy.
That's like half the team.
No, but the really ugly guy. He was good on defense. I can't think of his name.
Yeah, I can't either.
God bless him. Again, we'll be in the show notes if I remember to do show notes.
I'll have to Google that later as well.
It's excellent. Well, you know, they have these 30 for 30 stories.
Yeah.
Pretty much anything that ever happened ever between 1970 and now, there's a two-hour story about it to whoever's from that. Like, it's probably a guy from Buffalo that made that.
That's true.
You know what I mean? And there's been a few that have really jumped out and gotten into the national zeitgeist, as it were. The one about the University of Miami is a popular one. But Four Falls of Buffalo. Go home. You can watch it on
Four Falls of Buffalo.
You can watch it on, I think, on Amazon Prime, or pay through it for iTunes, or
probably. It wouldn't happen to be in my Delta headrest if I fly across the country, would it? Like certain other.
Are you trying to? Have you watched that on the Delta headrest?
No, I didn't watch it. But
your friend
I had a friend who did. Who Ezeldin Hassan of the Spindle, who was like, dude, did you watch? Have you heard about this? What was it? I watched it on the way to California. I said, Rise of the Suffer Fest? Yeah, that's it. I said, that gentleman lives over in West End. And he was like, dude, get out. He's from Atlanta. He was very excited about it.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that. What's up, man? Rise of the Suffer Fest. Again, it's the first mention, as far as we know, on this podcast, which is all about obstacle racing, in which I am one of the quote-unquote talking heads of it. And I hopefully will eventually be in a – maybe I can be in a talking head in a doc about Atlanta, maybe.
That would be great.
You know what I wanted to do? I wanted to, and I still may do this.
Yeah.
You and I could do this together, perhaps. When they started building that monstrosity known as Mercedes-Benz.
Oh,
I thought,
Lord.
I thought I should do, you know, a photograph a day kind of thing and do a whole doc about it and what it means to the city. And I was just talking to Chef Kevin, hate to name drop, about this. And
I already name dropped him for you.
Oh,
so
great.
It's all right.
And
I set it up.
It's one of those things. I have a love-hate relationship, I realize, with progress.
Yeah.
Because in the same way, so the Beltline on the West End, which many, many years before it looks like this, we're sitting right here on the east side, right in the heart of it.
It was wild and had arcs of trees over it.
Right. It's already concrete between mine house and Washington Park.
I just looked at it the other day.
So I can literally run to Clayton's house in like no time. Just feels weird.
Yeah.
Because, and people have like passed me and I'm like, hey, and I'm waving to them and it just like, I really liked when it was messy and muddy and
And kind of like lost and weird.
Right.
Yeah, where you could still have a taste of something wild in the city.
I think that's the thing. And I think that's the appeal of the ATL, right?
I think so. That's why Josh and I started running on it, because we both thought, well, let's go out and see what this is about.
So let's back up. If you've only been here 10 years, you had to have not lived here that long when you first decided to make that adventure.
It was, I think we started like January 1st, 2010. So I had lived here about 2.5 years.
And you decided, you'd heard about, like, was there already a lot? Had there been a lot of stories about Ryan, or what was the sort of genesis even for it?
Well, I, you know, I I have ridden all over the city. You know, as a cyclist, I was all over the place, and we were involved with the Beltline bike tour through the Atlanta Bicycle Coalition, with which I volunteered. And you know, I was just, you were hearing more and more about it, especially in the especially in that way. And they had these little, like, these bus tours, which now everyone knows about, but, like, Friday and Saturday mornings, they would have, a little shuttle bus, and they would take you around the Beltline corridor and through the neighborhoods it touched, so that they could show people, which was, like, me and, like, a bunch of
old people?
Like, sexagenarians, yeah, like, people who were kind of retired. They're like, this is what we can do Saturday morning. And they would take you everywhere. That was, like, at the time, the only approved way to get into the quarry. And so, you know, Josh and I, my best friend, we decided we were going to start running it in pieces. And we would do, like, a quarter of it and then a different quarter. And then we'd start stitching them together as halves and three quarters. And then eventually the whole thing, the whole taco.
So that was, I think that was March of 2010.
It was March of 2010.
And as far as you know, you're kind of the first two guys to do that.
I still have executive director Rob Bronner's email that says, to my knowledge, you are the first ones to do it.
Well, that'll never go away.
No, but we are far from the best to do it, because a lot of people have done it since, and they've ridden bikes on it, mountain biked on it. They've, you know, done the whole race, the Run the ATL. So people have... People also were drawn to it curiously and had that same experience, which makes me glad that they were able to get out there and get that taste of it before all the trees were mowed back. And, you know, this all used to be single track out here.
Yeah, I ran this a lot.
You remember, yeah.
I mean, when I lived in Kirkwood, you could run. Mm-hmm. I could run from Kirkwood, you know, through Crog to here. And I think even maybe a little bit of it was done, but then no way did it go all the way to... It didn't go all the way to Piedmont Park, and then it certainly wasn't like all the adjacent... Like, there was not what we see today, just
no,
constant riding.
I think when we started on this, the rails were still down, and they were just just pulling up the ties,
right.
The railroad ties.
I distinctly remember one Saturday, I was running, and as I approached, there were several men in hard hats, and the lead hard hat guy, who has shirt and pants as opposed to the working guys,
yeah,
sort of stepped out in front of me to, like, you know, kind of like give me the wave down sign. And as I approached him, I realized, like, I am running, mm-hmm, and in sneakers, and he, yeah, is not. So I just went right past him, and then he went, hey, like three or four times.
Yeah.
Like, if I just keep going. But then I had to come back because I live that way. So I'm like, fuck, I got to go around these guys. And I forgot how I got home. But that's happened since then. That happened once, and then on the West End, a couple of times it's been wet paint recently, wet.
Oh.
And I've had, like, you can't go here today.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does make me sad, and yet I know, like, good things will come of it, right?
Yeah.
Like I have an office now here that I wouldn't have had before.
Which is great. Yeah, you get to be on the thing that that you are tied to and that you enjoy so much, which is lovely. And I mean, these were here before, but they weren't like this. People didn't know about them in this way. You know, like I was telling you before we started this, I had a friend who lived in a loft over here, and it was a weird rat trap. It was like an M.C. Escher drawing when you got inside. Like, there was this staircase that just went this way, and then it would turn, and then there was a skylight you had to walk through to get to another part. It was very odd.
Every city, any major city, does the... We're going to get people back downtown again, and we're going to open this waterfront, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that.
And we have no waterfront.
We have no waterfront. We also have no real downtown.
No, because they've torn down the buildings to make parking lots, unfortunately.
Right. But what's happened is we've got this, mm-hmm, and then the neighborhoods are kind of doing their thing, right? This is something Kevin and I talked about.
They are.
So, again, I'm quite torn about the progress. I feel like I was at ground zero in Kirkwood.
Yeah.
I rented in Kirkwood in 2010, mm-hmm, and then bought a couple years later. And people live there would say, oh, yeah, there wasn't too long ago that X, Y, and Z. And now it is the absolute definition of Whitey's taken over and everybody's gone, and the housing values doubled. Like game over.
Oh, it's bonkers. It's home to the stroller set, and they, man, you look at their message board, and it's like, there's a black kid walking down the street. Be on the lookout.
And so funny you mentioned
it's
that.
Just a kid walking down the street. He's probably going to a friend's house. He might be going to the library.
So the Bolo,
yeah,
as they're
Bolo.
Called, I've made many friends. Say what you want about social media. I've made many friends through social media by making a sarcastic comment and getting likes, or someone else commenting on the ridiculousness of the Bolos. I'm like, that's a guy I want to hang out with.
Yeah, that's someone of similar temperament and mind.
Right?
Yeah.
And there was, I haven't checked it in a while because I don't live there, so I don't post as much. But yeah, I definitely remember, like, there was this huge post that'd be like, this guy just knocked on my door and is pretending to sell this, and don't let him in your... And it's like, first of all, if you're a grown person that doesn't know or can't... Do you not have your own thoughts about... I would tell my kid that.
Yeah.
If a stranger comes to the door, don't answer it.
I'd be like,
get me first.
River, you don't need to buy candy from this guy. Put on some pants and then come find me.
I'm very capable of looking out my window and saying, no, thank you, sir. Or, this person looks okay. I think I'll open the door.
Yeah.
And there was always that, oh my God, this guy came to our door and I think he was scouting it out to steal later.
It's like, I don't get that. Like, there were, when I lived in Kirkwood as well in, 2013, and there were a number of, car thefts at that time.
Always that.
Always car thefts. I witnessed one, which was wild, right before Pinhoti. You know, other than that, everyone was just like, I don't know, there are two black teens walking down the street with a lawnmower and a weed whacker. Do you think they stole them? It's like, no, they're going to ask you if they can mow your lawn so they can make some money. If you want, you know, take them up on their services. If not, say, no, thank you, but you might have better luck, you know, with my neighbor.
Right. And even then, so when we moved in, our car got broken into.
Yeah.
So you live downtown. You pretty quickly learn you don't lock the door and you don't leave valuables.
Right.
Because the crackhead that's going to open it at 3 a.m. is going to try to open it. If the door's open, great. Quickly look. Oh, there's no money or CDs. I'm going to be on my way now.
Yeah.
So that happened. That happened to me in Kirkwood. That happened when I moved to the nicer side of Kirkwood.
Mm-hmm.
It happened to me in the West End. Like, I can tell when they've rifled through my car because I might have left 50 cents in the change thing.
Yeah.
But the thing that really, what really happened was that one of the times that happened when I was like living in Kirkwood and feeling, you do feel somewhat violated. Although each time it happens, I feel less and less violated. I had a friend who lives near Lenox Mall and they went into his garage and stole his shit. So it happens in really expensive places too.
It happens everywhere.
Right.
The difference is up by Lenox and in Buckhead, it's a bunch of well-to-do honkies.
Maybe. Oh, you mean the thieves or the people who live there?
No, the people that live there. And they're very much, you know, we've retreated to our ivory tower. We're not scum like those who live further and further south. So it's very much racially charged and racially based and classist.
Well, and so here we are. So here's the billion-dollar question that I'm always trying to find is that everyone says we want to do affordable housing and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And how do we do that and keep sort of some real, like I know the West End is not going to become the East End overnight.
No.
And maybe it'll...
Although you wouldn't guess it from the way people are trying to sell property.
Right. So what is opening on that huge strip, right?
Yeah.
But five breweries...
Is it up to five now? It's like... Honest to God, it's like three breweries.
No, it's five.
Is it five now?
I took,
oh, my God. And a distillery.
And a hipster ice cream place.
A hipster pickle place.
Hipster pickle place is already open.
Which those pickles are delicious.
I haven't been there yet.
Yeah.
I only realized it was open when I looked at that sign. And I really should be nice.
Because they're across the street.
Well, because the owners, Lee and White, they're actually the ones who wanted to help me with ATL.
Oh, I see.
They donated. They let me use their parking lot. They donated headbands. Oh. God, thank you, Lee and White. I appreciate you. But I should have somebody from that show on this podcast. I probably will.
Probably should.
But I feel like, I mean, I guess a brewery doesn't have to have like walk-in traffic. But one of them is the Monday night, so I'm guessing they're going to actually have a thing.
Yeah.
But are they just rolling the dice and like, hopefully we can stay in long enough until it's gentrified, because otherwise they're just going to be the quote-unquote pioneers that go out of business, because nobody's looking for that place in my neighborhood.
Yeah, again, by looking at the various message boards from, you know, the Southwest communities, there are people that are excited about it. And there are people that are saying, great, you know, of all races and walks of life, but definitely of a certain economic stratum that are saying, great, I enjoy that and can afford it. However, there are a lot of people down here who don't want that, don't need that, don't have the funds for that, the means for it. So it's an interesting thing to look at. Like, it's almost like they set down a prefab East Side trail in that little corridor.
Right.
And said, these are the things we're going to have. We're going to have this bar, or, you know, this service here, or this very specialized dog treats bakery, or something like that. And it hasn't developed organically. And that, like you said, that's my fear, is that
right.
Maybe
and this
go
actually
under.
And this actually did, right? Like before the Beltline, these neighborhoods were happening already.
They were. They were already well populated, and they had, you know, low incidence of crime. They had a high quality of life because they are walkable neighborhoods with grocery stores adjacent that you can walk to, restaurants, bars, services that you can walk to. And down in Southwest, those are few and far between.
Right. And you can't necessarily make it look like that.
Right.
Although people will, I guess if you build it, they will come. Because as I said, I have seen, now that there's concrete, I have seen a few more walkers and joggers as opposed to just the homeless people I saw on the train track Southwest
right.
part.
Just kind of like that big tent village that they had that was always like blasting like Korean propaganda. Do you remember that behind that warehouse?
No, I remember the guy who would yell, "Reparations, you're going to get reparations."
Oh.
He was over close right by my house.
Was he the one that lived up in the tree?
And he had stereo and a TV as far as I know.
Okay.
And he stayed really close to right behind where you get on near my house.
Yeah.
And then he kind of moved a couple times as they, and now forget it, it's over. Now it's concrete city, yeah. So he's gone.
Yeah.
What was the thing I never saw? You gave me those excellent notes. You said there was like a carcass of dogs?
Oh, the dog bones. It's still there.
Where?
It's either over Metropolitan or over Pryor. And I mean, over the last 7 years, of course, the sun has broken it down. But it used to be like the whole bones of this dog and a collar. And Josh and I would always, you know, we would call it dog bones. We'd be like, are we close? All right, we're close to dog bones. But I was trying to show Hillary, my wife, when I took her out there one time.
I thought you meant Clinton. I'm glad you said your wife.
No, one L. and she's not lost in the, you know, New York woods. But I was trying to show her, and I think you can still find like some chunks of bone there.
So if I'm walking,
yeah,
okay, towards Glenwood from my house,
yes,
okay. Pryor?
I think it's one of the two trestles. So it's either the one that's over Metropolitan or the one that's over Pryor.
On the trestles?
It's on the trestle.
Which one of those is the one that's getting pretty shaky? That's Metropolitan.
Take your pick. They're both little rickety.
No,
Metropolitan, I think, is worse.
There's that one board of Metropolitan that I'm like, man, if the wrong foot, if the wrong run, the ATO person, we could be in trouble.
I know. Well, I keep, like, every time I go by there, I walk very slowly on everything that looks solid, and I try and walk right over the beams that are underneath it or the rails. Pryor's better because it has a beam on top of the iron, so you know you're not going to fall through. But yeah, Metropolitan's a little dicey.
And they're never going to do that part, by the way. That's the part that we know can hang on forever, right?
Oh yeah.
Because of the CSX railroad and blah, blah, blah.
I don't know whether CSX has abandoned that. I know they are no longer using it. They haven't used that part of the rail in a long time. But I don't know whether the Beltline partnership or Glorified Sidewalk, if you listen to the New York Times, which I do, the Glorified Sidewalk / Beltline, if they have acquired that right-of-way yet.
But I think that was the thing. I thought either you or Angel told me that it took a long time just to find the right person at CSX because they own so much fucking land throughout the nation.
All over.
That they're like, oh, yeah, the property rights to that are in a drawer somewhere, and we don't know, and we don't care. And that was the whole Board the Beltline thing, was to get a little attention.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so they did that, and I imagine by now they must have. I mean, the railroad knows that the Beltline's hard for this corridor, so they if they don't know where it's at, I mean, they could give them the right-of-way. They wouldn't be able to give them fee simple, which would give them outright claim to it.
What does that mean?
Fee simple is... That would give them outright claim to it overall. They would own that right of way.
So they want
to
keep some money, you're saying?
Well, they... No. It would be basically the railroad would condemn it, and they would sell that right in perpetuity, that ownership to them. Many rails to trails, they work with the railroads, and they have the use of the right of way. And essentially what they do is they preserve that corridor by having it as a trail and not allowing it for development. So that way, if the railroad wants to reclaim it later, they might have that option. So rail trails don't always have fee simple, which is outright ownership of these corridors. Sometimes they just have the use of the land. It's almost like a land bank.
You know what I just thought of?
No. I can't read minds.
You guys are going to move it all one piece at a time? He's not going to rent you guys a truck?
So for those listening, two gentlemen are dragging a table down the way, and neither of us offered to help.
No. Those two gentlemen from CW Studios, who are they make cartoon movies, animated movies and whatnot. I don't think they call them cartoons. I like being called that. But here's what's hilarious I just thought of.
Yeah, okay.
There's a great futuristic picture of Harper Station.
Of H. Harper Station?
Right.
Over on Memorial?
Right.
Yeah.
There's a great, like, here's what the Beltline's going to look like in 2 years, and it shows, like, the train and trees.
Oh, yeah.
If you made that exact same drawing in 1970 and said this is what it's going to look like in 1990, or they would have had the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And then the train thing never quite seems to happen.
No, it doesn't. And that's one of the things I...
People hate trains? Is that what we're supposed to think?
Well,
we're not even going to touch MARTA. It's another conversation.
I love MARTA.
No,
I
let's not go
but
there.
People
right.
do hate
Dude,
MARTA.
I'll rent y'all a truck. It's $40 a day.
And here comes a gentleman
from the truck
with
people.
Two chairs.
If your boss ain't you're going to carry everything hand by hand down this new place? Dude, don't make me embarrass your dad on this future podcast.
Hello, podcast.
So, yeah, so CW Studios, right? Charles West Studios. They make animated movies and television programs, etc. They're moving from this cool spot where we are now. They got their own spot further down, and today's moving day, and apparently the staff has to move every piece of furniture individually. It's not that far of a walk, but when you're moving one piece of furniture at a time, it is.
Yeah, it's not the best corporate outing either. Bowling might have been better, but sometimes you just move, I guess.
Right. So
the futuristic drawings and renderings.
Always include rail. Right. Also, the I think the Washington Bridge might even do that too.
Oh, like, yeah. And that's part of like the Beltline partnership's plan, I guess. But I honestly, Matt, I don't know if it's going to happen.
But even on the West End, yeah. Like behind Angel's House and over past Washington Park, they've left like a side to build the train, but then not the whole way. So it's like they're just going to be moving dirt for fucking 20 years.
Yeah. Oh, and they intend to. I mean, this was supposed to be a 22-year long project. So trains, allegedly, they're going to add them at some point. But there's, for those listening at home, if you want to go to Google, pull up a Google browser and put in glorified sidewalk Atlanta. Yeah. There is a New York Times article that some people took great umbrage with, and others said, yeah, that's accurate, where they called the transformative East Side Beltline Trail a glorified sidewalk, which come to Atlanta, where the players play, and also where they walk their dogs on excessively long leashes on what actually is a glorified sidewalk. But it's a lovely little promenade.
Well, but the thing that it doesn't have is there's no cars.
No cars.
So there's that appeal. And if the appeal is walking, running, strolling, biking, dare I say rollerblading, we don't
Blade
want
life.
Then that defeats the purpose of the train unless you wanted to go literally from one side of town to the other, like a 285. Then that would be maybe, oh, my friend lives in whatever. It's going to take an hour to walk there, but yeah. I can take a 20-minute train or whatever.
I could sit and read my pornographic manga novel while I ride the train around
exactly.
the inner city corridor.
So,
and originally that was their plan originally, but if you look at their new schematics, there are a couple of like trolleys or streetcars that they have going across this pear-shaped expanse of Beltline. Like there's one that's supposed to go down North Avenue. And I think there's another one that's supposed to go across like further south. So they might just have like trains on stretches of it. It'll end up just being another people mover or, you know, boondoggle like the downtown streetcar.
So define boondoggle for those listening at home.
Have you ever made a keychain at camp? And then did you attempt to make more of those and say, here's an idea, I'm going to sell this.
Oh my God, this is phenomenal.
It's basically, it's a something that takes a lot of effort and money with little return and does not pan out the way you expect. So one of the reasons everyone says, you know, cars killed, you know, they got rid of trolleys because Americans wanted the independence of cars. That's kind of true. But mostly it's trolleys went by the wayside because they were not adaptable. They were not nimble like buses and cars. So as cars started to become, well, this is a horde of ducklings over here. As cars became more common and then ubiquitous, they would cause gridlock and trolleys couldn't get by. If there was an accident on the trolley tracks, trolleys couldn't get by. So that's one of the reasons why buses were favored over trolleys. And trolleys originally weren't meant to be, you know, a solution for transportation. They were built by private industry to tracts of real estate outside of the population clusters so that they could sell that real estate. That's why, you know, Inman Park exists and why Candler Park exists. Because people built trolleys out there and said, now take the trolley out here and buy this land.
Inman Park, the first Atlanta neighborhood.
The first suburb of Atlanta.
Right, which is what, like 4 miles outside the city?
Not even. It's like 2 miles outside the city.
Right, but which
outside downtown.
So what we're seeing, by the way, this is the Trees Atlanta people are taking children on a tour. I've seen this many times here in the summer. They identify flowers, they play games. It's very nice.
And almost every one of these children has a backpack that is exceedingly large. They look like tortoises.
What do you think is in those backpacks?
I don't know, but they're not allowed into any organized sporting events or races with those backpacks.
Excellent point, because they may be carrying explosives.
They could have nails inside a crock pot. Who knows?
I just saw that movie about the Boston bombing soon after the Boston bombing, too. We can crank out. If a disaster happened, it's going to be in a movie. We're going to put Mark Wahlberg in it.
Yep.
And
if it's in Boston, of course.
Right, because he's already got the accent.
Yeah.
And it's going to be kind of, because he's kind of sexy. I'll kind of watch Mark Wahlberg in anything.
Except for, you know, The Happening by M. Night Shyamalan.
I didn't see that one.
Apparently, it was Trees. I hate to ruin the ending of that M. Night Shyamalan film for you all, but it's been years, Matt.
Okay,
Darth Vader was Luke's father.
Okay,
I think
okay,
we can
okay,
this
okay.
No spoiler alert on this.
You know, I do that to people. People are like, "Don't." I'm like, "Listen, if it's been a couple years, you can okay." So it's Trees. That's the answer.
Apparently, yeah, it was plants that are making people go nuts.
Okay.
So, watch out for that rustling.
Do you know that Soylent Green is made of people?
I have heard that. I don't know the source material.
Do you know that there's a product called Soylent?
I do. Yeah, actually, we had a few drink jugs of it that were like just white, unlabeled. My brother-in-law was trying Soylent for a while, and he might still be drinking it. I don't know.
But do you think they think it's funny when they name that product?
I absolutely do think they thought it was funny. I thought they found themselves to be exceedingly clever.
Okay, now I lost our train of thought when I was looking at these.
Talking about trains.
It's funny you mentioned those huge backpacks. That's really funny because, yeah, they really are. And I think that's just sort of an American thing, right? Like, why have a utilitarian thing when you can have a giant thing with your favorite cartoon character on it?
Yeah, or why get something that is appropriately sized when you can have something that is a behemoth, a leviathan, be it a backpack or a vehicle or a home in town that would not be out of place in suburban Woodstock.
But see, you know what's interesting is that after Super Size Me, the food place is kind of like chilled out on that, but now it's full on back. The biggest fucking burger, the most fucking bacon and a whole chicken and your apartment's on top of it.
I think Taco Bell now is is serving like chicken fried nacho chips, something like that. Like, I just saw like a breaded triangle that someone slipped into his mouth when Hillary and I were out to eat the other day, and I think that was the last time I ate that night.
What is some of your favorite fare in Atlanta?
You mean like which festival?
No, food. F-A-R-E.
Oh, F-A-R-E. I'm a big fan of Mimi's homemade falafel at Metro Deli in the Auburn Market, in the Sweet Auburn Curb Market downtown.
Right. That is where, what did I used to get there? The first Grindburger was there, if I'm correct.
Grindhouse, Grindburger's first location was and remains there.
Right.
Yeah.
I enjoy that. That was before even all this, right? Like, that's been
That was going back quite a few years.
Very little parking, though.
Yeah, which is great, because I used to work over there, so I would just walk, or I'd ride my bike.
Do you have a straight job? Do we have this conversation?
I don't now.
You're just a man about town?
I used to, but now I don't. Like I told you, I just left that job Friday. This is my summer vacation now this week.
What was your regular gig?
No one knows.
Oh, it's going to be a mystery like
it
that.
It has been a mystery.
Kind of like,
no, I have
kind
several.
Of like my middle name.
What, Matt B. Davis?
Yeah.
Sort it's of probably like Bartholomew or something.
People always guess that first.
It's something
it's
Jewish, so I just have to go back and like read the Torah or the
exactly.
Talmud or
whatever
or
the
Old
Jewish
Testament and be
follow.
Like, I'll just ask all my Jewish friends, what is a B name?
Right. People like, always guess Bartholomew first.
They'll be like Brian. Well, I think it's because we want it to be something
horrible.
A little more elevated.
Oh, I thought you were going to say horrible.
No.
It's fine. It's more of a mystery. That's fine.
Yeah.
But let's talk about your cookies and cakes and pies and whatnot.
Oh, yeah. Tinkertown Pies. So we're going to be just down the street from you now. Like, honestly, right around the corner. Once they finish that extension on the Beltline, you'll be able to mosey right there.
Oh,
we're in Studio Plex.
Okay. What? You know, it's this the building on the corner
mm-hmm.
where, what's it called?
Serpus.
What's that?
Serpus?
No. The big ice cream shop was there and the pizza place
Irwin
was there.
Oh, Street Market.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now they just ripped it open. Like,
what?
What's going on there?
I haven't seen that.
It had a sign up that said, blah, blah, blah is coming. Something Club is coming and it's gone.
What?
And we can walk down there in a minute. They just ripped that open.
Oh, no. I wonder if they sold it and they probably sold it. And it's
they didn't tear the whole thing down, but the side part where something big was coming isn't there.
I did
and I'm
not
still bummed you can't
that.
Get pizza there because I would enjoy a slice.
Everyone loved that old Fourth Ward
and
pizza.
And he moved to the suburbs? He moved to Duluth?
Yeah. But he's making bank.
A lot
of chefs are apparently going to the suburbs because they're moneyed world travelers, so they have a taste for something finer or exotic or different.
So
they don't just wait in the Chick-fil-A drive-thru all day.
And Applebee's and the rest of it.
Yeah.
So, I do like a good Chick-fil-A once in a while, though.
I thought you were more of a Zaxby's man.
It's so funny you should mention. Are you familiar with...
With your Zaxby's?
With,
yeah.
With my relation to Zaxby's?
Oh, I'm following, Matt.
See, this creeps me out somewhat because you know this much about me, sort of. Like, everybody knows the Waffle House thing. That's
Everyone
not,
knows Waffle
that's
House.
That's not a... But the Zaxby's thing, it's mostly people who are in my little obstacle world are aware of the Zaxby's connection.
One needs to remain connected to the zeitgeist to get ahead in this
world. Honestly, very rarely eat. I've somehow convinced myself, like most people, that if I'm eating at Subway or Chick-fil-A, it's not as bad as eating at McDonald's or Wendy's.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it probably is.
It might not be.
I've kind of convinced myself that the companies are a little bit better, even though they hate the gays. But they treat their employees okay. Maybe the food doesn't come from the guts of other animals.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's all crap, right?
I really don't know. No, the thing is, disclosure to those at home, I am vegan, and I am now my job that I can disclose, I am a vegan baker. I make vegan pies. But I don't give a shit what you eat. I don't give a shit what anyone eats. They make their own choices. I'm not going to harp
on
them.
Are you friendly with the Dolce Vegan people?
I love Dolce Vegan. Yeah, Hillary, my wife, who is an illustrator and an artist, she has work for sale in there.
Well, because when they opened in my neighborhood.
Yeah, in Kirkwood.
Ahead of the curve,
mm-hmm.
ahead of the hipster curve, I thought, wow, aren't you really limiting what you make?
Yeah.
Now, specification can be great because the people mm-hmm. that like it will always go to you, but you're also saying no to a lot of other people. How do you how would you say that as a purveyor, business owner of a very specific business?
I would say I am not, because just that, nor is Dolce Vegan. The fact that you are not using animal products to make baked goods does not preclude others from eating it. There's no one that says, I can only eat this if it contains eggs, unless they're going out to eat for an omelet. And they say, you know what, I would like an omelet. Please fold three eggs around some bell peppers and cheese. I would like to eat that. No, if you operate a vegan bakery, you don't know what the fuck's in a cookie. You can have here's a cookie. Eat it. All right. Does it have eggs and milk and butter? Yes. Does it not have eggs? Does it not have milk or butter? No. You don't know. These pies I make, people don't know.
Right.
They're surprised. They're like, oh, it's vegan. I didn't know. And they look at it differently. Like, did they save a cat to make this? No, I just didn't put milk in it. That's the only difference. It's still strawberries. Strawberries are already fruit. It's vegan.
Strawberries aren't a vegetable?
Did you not know that? Did you not know they are not an animal either?
I think my wife and I had this conversation.
That strawberries...
Like, everybody knows, because you learn as a kid, you know tomatoes are fruit, not a vegetable.
Mm-hmm.
But strawberries, what's the definition of a vegetable?
I really don't know. Tastes bad? according to Jack LaLanne, he said if man made it, don't eat it. If it tastes good, spit it out.
I met Jack LaLanne's wife.
Did you really? Did she bench you?
She is like a hot shit, like he is or was.
Yeah,
he is gone, right?
Yeah, he has parted.
God, rest
in power,
soul, right?
Yeah.
Rest in power. Is that what you say?
That's what we're saying for Jack LaLanne.
Instead of rest in peace. Hey, do you do voices? Do you do voices?
No, I'm just crazy.
Who do you get to do the voices for your characters? This is a good question. Don't run off. Can I nominate myself? People like my voice. Can I nominate myself? Really? All right.
Just start moseying up, doing different voices. See if.
When I was a young man,
yeah.
People said you should get into voiceover work when I was a young man. I wish I had followed that advice. Because by now I'd be like a celeb. I'd be on something. I'd be at all the cons. Those people are fucking killing it on the con tour.
They are massive. They have legions of followers.
Why don't we do that? Do you think it's too late to launch an ATL cartoon that we just, us and our wacky friends?
I don't think it's ever too late.
Misadventures we get along the Beltline.
Those gentlemen are making a go of it. And we also have Floyd County Productions, which does Archer. And they're launching another cartoon or another animated show for adults. I'm sorry. Also, one of the animators for Archer, he lives over in Westview. His name is Dominic Mashler, a hell of a guy, loves a good cocktail.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So we talked about your friend who has the weird name, Ezzy, what's his name?
Ez. Ezzeldin Hassan. He's Egyptian.
Who I will meet soon.
Yeah.
But who else? This is what I should be asking every guest. I didn't ask our friend the chef this morning, but who else should we be absolutely getting on this show?
Josh Wodersky, the run commuter, would be a fine one. He's the other one with whom I was on the Beltline. You know, we started running.
See, I thought one of you was like a myth or something.
Josh, mostly people think, is a myth because
right.
No one ever sees him.
Right.
He's silent, strong, and mysterious. Angel, definitely. You know, they're all the big names.
Well, Angel I actually know.
Yeah.
Angel I met because he saw me running in his backyard and was like, hey! That's sort of who he was fat
yeah,
Albert.
Yeah, but he probably didn't say, hey, get out of my yard. He was like, hey, come over here. Let me show you schematics for what's going to become the Beltline.
Dude.
I'm going to tell you about how to get involved with NPU 12 or NPUX.
Dude, but that's what's so great about that guy he's like, I thought of the show with him in mind almost.
Yeah.
I mean, he's, trust me, there's going to be like a six-parter with Angel.
I think there should be.
What are those kids doing? They're playing a fun game. Oh.
It's feng shui.
Perhaps. No, that's exactly how it happened. I told him, I was like, hey, I'm doing a race. And he's like, I keep wanting to do Fat Albert, but I'll do Angel instead.
Is it because he has this gravelly voice like
this? You guys? That's what you guys did in the paper the other day. You got it all wrong.
And that was our friend Ben.
Oh.
Ben did a story.
Yeah.
Ben
Gray.
Right. And I was like, no, that wasn't us. Where are these other people?
Yeah.
But anyhow. But who else should I get?
Oh.
And they can be well known. You can say Arthur Blank, although maybe you don't care, but I don't know.
I really don't. Haven't we heard enough about Arthur Blank and his big robotic butthole of a stadium that they're building over there? That's great. Yeah, it looks wonderful. And then he's going to build the city's going to dump $23 million into a gleaming tapeworm of a bridge, because that's exactly what the residents of Vine City need.
But
faster,
that,
longer access.
I saw those schematics, and didn't they later go, once it got publicized, it was one of those things that people were like, okay, scrap that. We can't do that. We can't make a $23 million bridge.
I don't know. So far as I know, they're still planning on it.
So for people who don't know, instead of crossing the street at Vine, where the Vine Street train station is, they're going to build sort of a looped, glow-in-the-dark, giant snake where you don't have to touch the street, and it's going to cost $23 million.
Yeah, where I think it, because it's going to loop and bend like some sort of Mobius strip from which you'll never escape, it's like 800 feet and climbing two stories rather than go up one story and cross the street at grade, which is like maybe 200 feet across. So yeah, a simple bridge, no thank you.
But see, here's the things I think about. That looks like someone I know. Here's the things I think about.
Yeah.
Like I said, coming from my house, so traveling west to east, I guess, or south to north on north side, or what's it called on the south end? It's called something else that becomes north side.
North Side Drive? Metropolitan.
As you come over that hill and the Transformers butthole, is that what you called it?
Yeah, it's just this gleaming anus of a stadium.
It towers. It makes the dome look small.
I know.
The dome is huge.
The dome is massive.
The dome seats 75,000 people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And this thing is just, it's like, what it, how, and you know what's like near it? Nothing.
Yeah. Because that, I mean, effectively, those constructs and Northside Drive have cut Vine City and English Avenue off from access to the rest of Atlanta. There are only like two accessible ways, and none of them are good for foot traffic. It's, I don't know, it's garbage.
I just don't understand how, I mean, the concept of a 20-year-old monstrosity,
yeah,
right, and making it not irrelevant, but pretty much.
Yeah.
To build an... Are they going to tear it down when this one's done?
They are. They've already set a demolition date, and I think it's in July or August.
Oh, that's right. My good friend John Tackett, you must know him.
Yeah, I know John, of course.
John also will be on the show. John like set an event, a Facebook event for it. And then what's going to go there? A parking lot?
Yeah. It's a green space, Matt, but it's like... it's green space on which you can park. So yeah, effectively a parking lot that they are calling a green space. Which, you know, the first time that it's even mildly wet and they have a game, it's going to get churned up and become, you know, a tractor pull.
Wait a minute. So they're going to make a multi-level parking lot?
No, they're going to make a flat green space that is like some sort of grass or grass approximate. And they will let people park on it on game days. Other than that, it's green space for all the people that are just hanging around the dome in the World Congress Center day in, day out. It's ridiculous. It's basically a green parking lot.
But here's the part that always has stuck wrong with me is that the convention center is pretty busy almost all the time.
Yeah.
We are because the way that, for people who don't understand, the way the conventions work, unless they're like some huge Vegas destination, like the Adult Video Awards,
yeah,
these things move around. Dentists, doctors, building materials. Mm-hmm. It's like they don't want to go to the same ones every year because they know their people want to travel. So it's Orlando, Atlanta, Dallas, Philly. They move around. So we've got New Orleans. We've got, I also used to sort of be in that business, we've got a shitload of people coming to this town all the time.
I think, aren't we like the fourth largest convention city in the United States?
Right.
One point we were.
Right. You want to undo that so it doesn't make noise. So even if you take out us residents, just those people being here, we've never, ever been able to make the city of Atlanta something that people come to, and I don't understand why they haven't still figured that out. Like, they've opened a couple of things, like, oh, we've opened a couple things on Lucky Street. But other than that, if you come to Atlanta... we've got the Coke Museum and the Aquarium.
But that's the problem, is that they are trying to build a city for non-residents rather than build a city from the from the inside out. They're building it from the outside in with tourism in mind, with impermanence in mind, rather than saying, what do people who live here want to do? How can we make this appeal to people who live here? And then the people who live here will get involved. They will start businesses. They will bring vibrancy and a world-class fair to it. And that will make it appealing to people from outside the city because they'll want to be involved with that. That's why we have no bustling downtown. That's why we struggle to have contiguous neighborhoods because Atlanta is so focused on building for the suburbs and beyond.
Yeah, they went so far as to actually put a stadium there.
That's why they gave $700 million to Arthur Blank to build a stadium.
And they can have it, man.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, couldn't that have been better used to do something for the city?
I'm still not quite sure. What is the thing going to do that they're building that goes from the stadium all the way to Canton? What is that they're still working on?
What? From the stadium to Canton?
Yeah, you haven't seen it?
No. What, like some sort of
like
tube?
Do you never go OTP? No, a tube would be cool.
I know, a tube would be great.
It's some sort of, it can't just be a SUV lane or whatever. What do you call it?
A high occupancy bus lane or something?
Like something about the games it's going to do.
What the fuck?
Just making sure we still have battery.
No, that's ridiculous. You haven't seen that? No.
If you drive on 75, you'll see parts of it. I'm thinking like ATL. I'm like, dude, how can we do a race on that before it's finished? But there's too many massive drop-offs where it's like raised freeway and then nothing.
Oh, that's what that thing is?
Yes.
Yeah, every time we go by it, I'm like, I ask Hillary, what the hell is this? Is this some sort of bypass? What are they trying to bypass? Yeah. So it is a bypass for the interstate?
I'm thinking that somebody said they're going to turn it on and off like one way. So on game day, it all goes to there before the game, then it all comes back afterwards.
Because that's much better than building a train down the median of 75.
Right.
Much better. What in the glorified hell is that garbage?
I don't know, dude.
That's a boondoggle. We want to bring that back.
That's going to be worse than that wicked weird train. But I think because we've chatted for a nice long time and we're almost out of battery,
tell people where
they can support you or your fair or your wares.
For Tinkertown Pies. Tinkertown Pies, your source for vegan, vintage, and other sort of baked goods. Vegan vintage pies over at the Spindle at, I think it's 659 Auburn Avenue in Studioplex. We'll be opening in July.
Of 2017.
Of this year, of 2017, yeah.
Social media channels?
Yeah, we're on Instagram, at Tinkertown Pies. My wife is building me a website. I'm not very good at that part of it.
What part are you good at?
I'm the baker. I'm good at the baking of it.
Right?
Yeah.
How much do you relate to pita?
To pizza? I love pizza.
No, to pita from...
Oh, the people for the ethical treatment of animals?
The other pita. Pita Malark. Did you know who I meant the whole time or no?
I did not, no.
Do you know who I mean now?
I actually thought you said pizza.
Do you know who I mean now, though?
No, I don't.
Have you not seen the Hunger Games?
I have not.
So I'm not a big blockbuster guy.
Yeah.
But
you're more of a like movie zone guy?
I'm more of a
It's a very old-fashioned joke, kids.
I'm more of a documentary guy.
Yeah.
But I watched one of the Hunger Games with one of my kids and then I got sucked in and I watched all three.
Mm.
Not bad as those things go. But the leading man, as it were, is the baker.
His name is... Oh, that's right.
So I was trying to make a hip reference or a somewhat reference.
And I'm obviously not hip in the least
He's a baker and he's really sweet. Because she's the lead. The female is the lead in that movie. They do sort of a little gender thing.
Yeah, where she's great with a bow and arrow.
With a bow and arrow and sort of leads the relationship. And he's sort of trying to... Which one is she going to pick? The hunky guy or Pita, the sensitive guy?
Yeah. So I like that. It's like there's a hunky guy and then there's a baker.
Right.
That's accurate here, too. I'm not hunky at all.
All right, man. Let's wrap it up, dude.
It's been a lot of fun.
Good chatting.
Yeah. Always a pleasure, Matt.
All right. Up top.
Matt B. Bartholomew Davis.
Alrighty, there it went, my chat with Kyle. As I said, a lot of exciting stuff coming, lots of great interviews,
pay attention to that Instagram. You'll see who we talk to and then who's coming up and then who we've had. Again, that's ATL Podcast on the Instagram. The website is theatlantapodcast.com, which also has links to our social channels. Stay tuned. So much good stuff's coming. I sound like I'm in a rush because I kind of am. I want to get this out to you ASAP, and it's late in the day on Tuesday if you're hearing this. All right. Love you, miss you, mean it. I have got to run.